Hi, this is Josh Barrow. On Thursday, October 20th, KCRW is coming out of our basement studios for a civilized, yet provocative, Left, Right, and Center Live. Join us at the beautiful Ace Hotel Theater in downtown Los Angeles for a night of amusing and insightful commentary on this unique election season. I'll be joined by Kelly Goff, Gene Sperling, and Mona Charon as we dissect Trump versus Clinton, Democrat versus Republican, and fact versus fiction. Buy your tickets today at kcrw.com/LRCLive.
Hi, this is Robert Scheer, Scheer Intelligence for KCRW, where the intelligence comes from my guests, in this case, Misty K. Snow, who is the first transgender candidate of a major party for the U.S. Senate. In this case, it's the Senate seat in Utah, occupied by a pretty conservative Senator, Mike Lee. I guess, Misty, you'll tell us just how conservative he is. And I met Misty at the Democratic Convention. You don't mind if we're on a first name basis until you become senator, do you?
That's fine.
And I must say, what you were saying was much more interesting than what was being said up on the platform. And it struck me that the question I really wanted to put to you, we could talk about being the first transgender candidate, but I really like to begin by asking you, as somebody who has said that you got turned on to politics, or at least running for office pretty much by Bernie Sanders, and then you looked at the conservative Democrat who was about to be nominated to be the Democratic nominee against the incumbent in Utah, and you said, well, why do we have to settle for that? And then you, again, I think inspired by Bernie, decided to run, and the Democratic Convention actually was not going to endorse you, but you had enough support that you could force a primary, and in that primary, you walloped the person who had been the anointed Democratic candidate. Is that a fair assessment?
You know, I knew that, because Bernie Sanders said to dwell in, New Hampshire, that, he'd probably do well in Utah, given our demographics. And I knew that a lot of the delegates from the state convention, they'd be elected out of those same caucuses. So I knew that the delegation at the state convention would potentially be very progressive. So someone running to challenge this guy from the left could possibly do really well. And I, thought about that when I decided to run. I mean, I actually ran because I wanted this guy to be challenged. And I was really disappointed that no one was stepping up to do it, because I thought he was terribly wrong on important issues. I mean, a Democrat who wants to write an op-ed coming out against Planned Parenthood is, I think, not just unacceptable, but offensive. And, and he was wrong on LGBT rights and, military. And, I just thought he was wrong on almost all the issues I care about. And he wasn't being challenged. And I didn't know anything really about running for office, didn't have any support the Utah Democratic Party, didn't really know anyone, didn't have any money, but I just had this gut feeling I need to do this, because if I don't do this, then no one else will, and important issues that I care about will not be given a voice.
Yeah, and you beat him by quite a bit in the open, in the primary in the Democratic Party, and it's interesting because you've said you don't want your campaign to be seen, your candidacy to be seen primarily as the transgender issue, although it's important, but you're running really as someone who is a working person who comes from a poor background. You work in a supermarket as a cashier, your identity really was with Bernie Sanders on these issues of economic exploitation and what's wrong with the economy and the lousy jobs. Is that accurate?
Yeah, a lot of that's accurate. I did win the primary because I'm trans. That wasn't even really an issue in the primary. I mean, I won because, I tacked him on. Honestly, that being Planned Parenthood was really, I think, the defining issue of the campaign. That's what we forced him into the primary on that issue. And every interview he had, challenged him on his pro-life stance. It came up in every interview he had from then, because he wrote that op-ed where he called for an investigation of Planned Parenthood. And, you know, if you're running for Democratic nomination, that's a pretty controversial position to have. And,
we're talking about a fellow named Jonathan Swinton, who defined himself as a conservative Democrat, and that, in fact, was actually taking positions that really seem out of swing with the Democratic Party. But in Utah, where no Democrat running for the Senate has gotten more than 33% of the vote since 92, he thought he fit right in, right? Was that the strategy?
Yeah, I mean, he described himself as a conservative, described himself as pro-life. You know, I mean, some of the news articles talked about how he used to be a registered Republican. So, you know, he's what we call them Republican lights. You know, I made the arguments that Scott Hall, he ran for U.S. Senate in 2012 against Orrin Hatch. He got about 30.8% of the vote. Sam Granato, he ran against Mike Lee in 2010. He got 32.8% of the vote. You know, they both ran as moderate Democrats, and, you know, being a moderate Democrat, I mean, doesn't seem to be a winning strategy, because if it's a winning strategy, you wouldn't lose by 30 or 40 points.
If I can interrupt you, the polls are showing that you pull well among millennials like yourself, and who really don't go very much for that sort of traditional, safe, moderate label. Is that what you're finding as you go out campaigning?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of excitement among millennials. And, you know, I try to make the case that if I was elected, you know, I'd be the first millennial in the U.S. Senate. I'm 31 years old. I'd be a voice for our generation. And, you know, that excites people my age, because, like, yes, we need representation in Congress. And I, you know, if I could generate genuine excitement, make them want to come out, you know, I think we'll do a lot better. I mean, because they'll want to come out for a Democrat who is almost indistinguishable from their opponents. Like, you know, we have, you know, it's like pick your poison. I mean, that's, you get, why bother to show up when there's not a real choice? So by offering a real choice, I feel like I'm generating real excitement that makes people actually want to turn out and vote. And I think that matters. And whether or not I'm ultimately able to win, it should help some of our ballot Democrats. I mean, in 2014, we lost a House legislative seat by 47 votes, another one by 53 votes, another by 195 votes. You know, having those, you know, a few more Democrats turn out, we could have had a few more Democrats in the state legislature. I mean, we lost a House of Representatives seat by 7,511 votes, while more than 15,000 registered Democrats in that district didn't even show up to vote. So I think it's very important that we have candidates that are actually exciting among our own base. I mean, quite frankly, there's not a path to victory for a Democrat who can't turn out their own base.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing is that Bernie Sanders did carry Utah in the Democratic primary, defeating Hillary Clinton. And I want to get to some of these bread and butter issues, because you're living the life of people who are having a hard time. I mean, you couldn't do this interview until late in the day, because I gather you work. You know, you couldn't afford to go to college, and it wasn't going to work for you. But the fact is that we got plenty of people. We're doing this broadcast from the University of Southern California, and there are plenty of graduates from very fine schools like ours who still struggle to find jobs after they graduate. I know that may not be not something that we want to advertise, but that's true right across the country. I had a guy tow my car the other day up by Santa Barbara, who graduated with a degree in geology and was towing cars for the last 4 years. So I think the heart of your campaign is really the same as the Sanders campaign, which is, you know, the economy is not providing an opportunity for most of the people of your generation.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly. We want an economy that works for everyone, and instead of an economy that only works for the 1%. And, you know, that's like a big reason why I'm decided to run, because there's a lot of important issues that, you know, like establishment Democrats don't want to raise. And, you know, so I, you know, decided to run for office because I kind of ran against an establishment Democrat. And I think that's why I was able to get the endorsement by Our Revolution, which is that organization founded by Bernie Sanders to support progressive candidates and policies. I'm one of just three U.S. Senate candidates running to have that endorsement, along with Russ Feingold and Deborah Ross. So I think that's an important endorsement that, you know, I think, you know, shows that I do care about these issues.
I think the issue that you're really raising is, how is it like to live from paycheck to paycheck? And that's really what I got out of some of the speeches I've read that you've given and your comments and so forth. There's a reality out there now, which is that it's pretty hard to get by, even when you want to work hard, when you have the right attitude. And it's very interesting that in your case, even though, you know, the thing that magazines and others pick up on is that you're the first trans candidate to run, you're actually making these economic issues the heart of your campaign, aren't you?
Yes, that's exactly it. Congress, I mean, they don't, you know, they're disproportionately made of millionaires, lawyers, hedge fund managers, business owners. I mean, we have a government up by and for the billionaires that, you know, is so out of touch with the needs of average working people. I mean, you know, if we want a government that actually represents working class people, I think we need to elect more working class people to government. I mean, you know, before I ran for U.S. Senate, I'm working at a grocery store. I'm making less than $30,000 a year. Mike Lee, in 2010, before he ran for U.S. Senate, he was a lawyer in the District of Columbia making about $500,000 a year. I mean, you know, and his father was a politician. And, you know, so he's out of touch. Like, you know, he doesn't understand. He has what it's like to be poor, what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck. You know, he's voted against minimum wage increases, even though $7.25 is not a living wage. It's not a living wage in Utah. It's not a living wage in the District of Columbia or anywhere else in this country. Yet he will talk about how he wants working people to have more money in their pockets. It's, you know, if you really believe that, then why are you voting against raising the minimum wage?
This, Robert Scheer, I'm talking with Misty K. Snow, a 31-year-old transgendered person, a woman who's running for the Senate, the first transgendered person to run for the Senate in a major party. She's the Democratic Party nominee, selected in a primary that also selected Bernie Sanders in Utah, and represents a progressive view from a millennial perspective, which I think could catch fire here. And in fact, if you just get more than 32% of the vote, you'll be doing better than any Democrat, whatever they call themselves and whatever age and whatever gender, has done for what, 30 years, right?
So the best has been 33.0% since 1992. If I could pass that threshold, it would be better than any, you know, Democratic U.S. Senate candidate since 92. And, you know, the person who ran 92 was actually a sitting congressman. So it's, you know, that'd be a huge victory. And it also show, you know, that Utah Democrats, you know, running as a progressive candidate was actually more successful than running as a moderate candidate, and that we should, you know, if we're going to run for U.S. Senate, we should run on issues that Democrats care about. We should stand up for the working class. We should stand up for women's rights. We should stand up for the LGBT community. Stand up for college students who can't afford to go to college, you know, and actually run as Democrats who, you know, fight for the core issues of the Democratic Party instead of running as moderates who want to make themselves almost indistinguishable from Republicans.
So then how'd you feel? I guess I am putting you on the spot, but you're at the Democratic convention, and I was there, I guess it was the night before that Hillary got the nomination, but we knew it was going to happen. And you were sitting a few seats away from me at the convention. You were for Bernie Sanders. Many people in that hall were for Bernie. And he certainly was going to raise the issues of how do you live on $30,000 a year in this country? How do you live on even twice that in this country? And certainly many communities where, you know, school teachers in many communities can't afford the rent where they're supposed to be teaching the children. And you're at the convention, and Hillary Clinton gets the nomination. And I know, you know, you're carrying the banner of this party, but you must have been disappointed because she certainly has not shown all that much commitment to people making those kind of wages.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, I always supported Bernie Sanders, always wanted him to win, always knew it'd be an uphill battle for him to win because it's, you know, Hillary Clinton had the backing of the establishment. And right after the California primary, I think I spent like a month and a half like just hoping maybe she'll nominate Bernie Sanders as the vice presidential candidate because, you know, that would be, you know, certainly something, or at least maybe a more progressive candidate. Maybe, heck, even Martin O'Malley, but instead we get Tim Kaine. It's just like, you know, so it was really disappointing. But on the other hand, I mean, you know, I mean, I don't dislike Hillary Clinton. I mean, I wish she was better on a lot of issues. I mean, but on the other hand, I think Bernie Sanders, you know, challenging her as hard as he did helped make her take stronger stances on a number of issues, but also helped you know, help define the platform in a much more progressive way. So I think it was very important. I think he had a lot of important victories, and I think Hillary Clinton's like the best candidate. I mean, I do think it is a good moment that we have a woman as a major party nominee. I mean, I remember at the night of her accepting nomination, I mean, I actually teared up a bit because I thought it was a beautiful moment. You know, it's not that I'm anti-Clinton, but you know, I would love to see her take stronger stances on a number of issues.
Yeah, and fortunate for someone like yourself who's running as the official Democratic Party candidate, you can point to a lesser evil Republican candidate, a greater evil, I mean, gosh, what a mistake, a much greater evil Republican candidate. You know, so that sort of makes it easier. But let me ask you about being a progressive in Utah. And you grew up as a Mormon, and how long did that last?
I mean, I was raised LDS. I've, you know, stopped going to church in my teenage years. I mean, I never, like, officially left the church, but I mean, I haven't been to one of their services in probably over 15 years, probably a bit longer than that. I mean, my mom still goes to church sometimes. A lot of my best friends, you know, they go to church, they're LDS, they're super active, and, you know, it's just how I was raised. It kind of, I guess, kind of gives me a good understanding of the culture of the LDS faith and the people who believe in that religion. I mean, I understand where they're coming from and kind of understand, like, how that shapes the culture. And I think it probably, you know, has helped inform a lot of my own values as well.
Yeah, and you know, it's easy to demonize any group or as different or so forth, but there's a lot of good things have come out of that religion, and that was a minority religion that had a fight against intolerance. And I'm just wondering now that there's been, you know, the one issue, race and certainly homosexuality have been two issues that the church has been so poor on. But how is it reacting to change now, and how is it reacting? How are folks reacting to your candidacy?
I mean, I haven't had any real negativity about it. I mean, you know, it's like it's, you know, I was a lot more afraid when I first started running. I was afraid there'd be a lot more negativity, but most people seem super supportive. I mean, a lot of people seem to like that I'm a working class person running for office. And honestly, very little focus is given to the local press about me being trans. Far more is given focuses on the fact that I work at a grocery store. I mean, that's really where a lot of the focus is, or the fact that I'm a millennial. I mean, there was one report on the local media that talked all about me being a millennial, and that's, so those seem to be like the issues that really get focused on. I mean, some of the other, there's been a couple like women's publications in like national media that talked about how the fact I'd be the first woman elected U.S. Senate from Utah, because Utah's never sent a woman to the U.S. Senate. So I've been interviewed by publications like Lenny Letter and Broadly and Glamour that are more of a women's like publications, you know, that kind of focus more on me being a woman in the U.S. Senate.
This is Robert Scheer talking to Misty K. Snow, the Democratic Party candidate for the United States Senate in Utah and the first transgender candidate in any major party in the United States. And we will be right back.
Check out KCRW's All News Channel, News 24, programming from KCRW, NPR, BBC, and more, 24 hours a day. Go to kcrw.com/news24 or listen on KCRW's app.
This is Sheer Intelligence. We are talking to Misty K. Snow, the Democratic Party candidate for the Senate from Utah and the first transgender candidate from any major party in U.S. history. But I think it's fascinating that you bring up the really critical point. What would someone who's making $500,000 a year like your opponent, Senator Mike Lee, the incumbent senator, know about living on the minimum wage as it's now, or even as it's supposed to be raised to what Bernie Sanders would call $15 an hour, and who had a wealthy father? And I know from what I've been able to research about Mike Lee, he's pretty good on some issues like the surveillance state and that sort of thing, you know. But he's a libertarian, basically, who I read a quote from you. You said he doesn't really want government to do much for anybody. Is that basically a fair assessment?
That's kind of it. But I mean, saying he's a libertarian, I mean, is kind of, yeah, I mean, the chairman of the Utah Libertarian Party has told me, he's like, no, I don't think any libertarians should be voting for Mike Lee because the Libertarian Party of Utah actually doesn't like Mike Lee. So it's, so he's like really just more of a solid conservative. I mean, because he's anti-LGBT and libertarians are certainly pro-LGBT. Mike Lee hasn't made any like indication he'd be against decriminalizing marijuana or restoring the rights of legal pot users to own firearms. You know, so libertarians, you know, would encourage him to take different stance on those issues. But he's the guy who shut down the government, which is, you know, libertarians believe in the Constitution, you know, and the, you know, if you're in Congress, passing a budget is your constitutional duty. By refusing to do that, by leading the government shutdown, you know, you are actually abdicating your duty. He hasn't given he's been against giving Merrick Garland a hearing, which again, you know, that's his constitutional responsibility. The Senate is supposed to give hearings for court nominees. And, you know, if they don't like a nominee, they're welcome to vote him down. You know, but their job says they're supposed to actually have a hearing, and they are refusing to even do that. So there's this kind of like a culture of refusing to do his job. And, you know, from public policy polling in August actually showed 65% of Utahns actually want Merrick Garland to have a hearing. So he's kind of really out of touch with what a majority of Utahns want on that issue and a number of other issues. But when we look at Mike Lee's record, he's pretty much Senator No. He voted against the opioids bill, which would have provided more funding to help combat opioid addiction. He was one of just two votes on that bill. It's like passed 92-2. And if I remember correctly, that bill was actually sponsored by the other Utah senator, Orrin Hatch. So Mike Lee is, you know, it's interesting to see Mike Lee take the complete opposite position to that. And then, you know, he voted against aid to Flint. You know, that bill that passed last month, 95-3, was one of the three no votes. And earlier year, he used a procedural hold to try to block that aid. So, yeah, which a lot of people find really hard because, you know, we're talking about children drinking water contaminated lead, which can cause brain damage. Most people are like, yeah, we want to do something to make sure children have clean drinking water. And, you know, Mike Lee doesn't seem to care. And Mike Lee voted against renewing the Violence Against Women Act in 2013. You know, most people are like, you know, we care about women having resources and places they can go so they can escape an abusive partner. And Mike Lee, again, doesn't seem too concerned about that. So he's kind of not just like, you know, he's not just like necessarily just even anti-gay. He's certainly that, but anti-women, anti-children, honestly, I think just anti-people.
In the main, what I got from his whole attitude is, you know, it's like what they used to say about George W. Bush, or maybe his father was said about, but that he was born on third base, but he thought he hit a triple. And you know, here's a guy who, like you say, is making $500,000 a year, and he'll make a lot more after he leaves the Senate. And his father obviously made a lot of money, and yet can pass judgment on ordinary folks trying to get by. And here's a government that gives enormous amounts of money to the big corporations, to the military-industrial complex, the big rap on Trump now. He doesn't pay taxes at the level that you pay taxes at. And yet here's a guy under the guise of being a libertarian. I like things about the libertarians as far as keeping government out of people's personal lives in a negative way. But, you know, the fact of the matter is there's something absurd for this guy thinking that he could understand what you understand working in that grocery store. Your mother made that point. She said, speaking about you, she's always followed her heart. She's a brave girl, and she also works in that supermarket, right? In that chain?
She works the same company. She doesn't work in the same store.
No, I know that. And then she went on to say, becoming a woman is something that she has wanted for a really long time, ever since high school. I think by running for the Senate, she's showing people that a person's gender isn't what matters. People are people. Everybody matters. And that is Misty's message. I'm talking to Misty Snow, who's running for the Senate as the Democrat, official Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate in Utah. And I think One thing that's very positive, I know your campaign is not about your gender, it's about the issues you're raising, about the quality of life, but certainly one big issue is respect for everybody out there, as your mother points out. And I think you would agree that there's been incredible progress regarding gay issues and now hopefully transgender issues, and that the American public has shown an amazing openness because they suddenly realize, hey, it's the guy I know from the grocery store, it's the guy I know from church, or the woman I know from church. So it's very difficult to make them the other. Is that what's been your experience in the few years that you've been out?
Yes, I think that's exactly it. I mean, a lot of people are afraid of, you know, people that are different from them simply because they don't know anybody that's like that. And the more visibility people have, you know, the more people become aware of them and the less they are afraid of them. And that's really, it's just about building understanding and building like awareness. And as people become more aware, they become more understanding, and that leads to acceptance.
You know, I think that in terms of understanding other people, I think when I try to understand why, first of all, why Sanders was so successful, and that's the progressive side of the coin, and then why Trump is able to appeal a lot of working people on the reactionary side with scapegoating people and being racist and so forth. There's one common theme, though. A lot of people in this country are hurting. You know, they're hurting. They're seeing the good jobs go. They were sold fraudulent loans and houses that they couldn't hold on to. They're hurting. And I think that's a message that the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, is out to lunch on it totally. But even the Democratic Party, I shouldn't say even, the Democratic Party is having a hard time on the elite level understanding the pain out there. And it seems to me that the value of your campaign is that you are one of the most clear-thinking candidates in expressing that pain. You know, what does it mean to try to get by in America now, given the rigged economy?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly, I think, why I resonate. I mean, Social Security Administration says 51% of people in this country make less than $30,000 a year. So that's literally a majority of our working people barely scraping by. They're in poverty or close to it. And so there's all this anger because they don't see the economy working for them. They see the economy working for Wall Street, but not for Main Street. And yeah, you know, so Bernie Sanders, he has this great grand vision on how to fix the economy so it actually works for people. You know, and you have Donald Trump, who, you know, he's more of a demagogue and, you know, is kind of misdirecting the anger instead of, you know, directing the anger at Wall Street and other corporate interests. You know, he's having them misdirect that anger towards minorities. And so we have this anger, and a lot of people, you know, they want to see some change. And I think until longer these issues go unaddressed, the fundamental issue, I think, you know, these issues will keep coming up. And I think Hillary Clinton will probably win in 2016. But in 2020, I mean, I think a lot of these issues will still be present. And, you know, unless Hillary Clinton really makes good on a lot of her campaign promises, I think there will be still that bubbling frustration for some real change. And she's going to have to either take a more progressive stances and actually start, you know, really, she has to really fall through with that, or she's going to be primary challenged, or she's going to be challenged from a Republican, and it might be a one-term presidency if she fails to actually address these issues over the next few years.
You know, I want to thank you, Misty K. Snow. She's running for the Senate as the Democratic candidate in Utah. And before I wrap it up, I just want to say that last statement is probably the most important message that has to be gotten through to the Democratic Party in this election. Yeah, you got a real bum there running as your opponent, and you know he's coming apart at the seams. But the very fact that he's even a contender, shows how much pain, suffering there is out there that people would turn to basically a rube like that. And I think we don't hear enough of what we just heard in the last, you know, half hour from you. Somebody who's out there trying to get by paycheck to paycheck and seeing what's going on in this country. And so I want to thank you. Do you have any last words? You're going to
Yeah, so like, for those of you who've been listening and you'd like to find out more about me and my platform, or like to donate or volunteer or see my social media, I encourage you to go to my website at mistyksnow.com, MistyKSnow.com. And if I want any lesson to come out from my campaign, is that it doesn't matter what you look like, where you're from, what your background is, what your education level is, you can run for office, you can make a difference in your community, you can give a voice to issues you care about.
Well, thank you so much for doing this, and I hope you get that word out in the campaign. And I guess I should make an offer to any of your opponents if they want to be interviewed by me. We'll give them equal time, and I'll certainly send that request to them. This is Bob Scheer, another edition of This Scheer Intelligence. Josh Scheer and Rebecca Mooney are the producers of this show for KCRW. Mario Diaz and Kat Yor are the technical engineers. We're broadcasting from the Annenberg School for Journalism and Communication at USC, and our chief engineer here is Sebastian Grubaugh. See you next week. Thanks.